This is a Haunted Attraction Network production. Achieve more with all our products at www.hauntedattractionnetwork.com.
Haunts come in all shapes and sizes, from intimate home experiences to grand historical prisons. Among the myriad of haunts out there, one has stuck in my mind as particularly unique: the Queen Mary's Dark Harbor. The Queen Mary herself is a splendid experience. She thrusts solemnly out from the water, a hulking monument to a bustling era. The past clings to the corridors like dew on grass and weighs down one's imagination. This past month, I returned to meet with Charity Hill regarding this year's event. As I walked towards the production building, recorder in hand, the cast was meeting for the very first time. The shipyard lay in that state of organized chaos that industry folk know so well, facades half erected and rigging lay strewn in all directions. Charity and I escaped into a side office just inside the large white production dome, where we huddled to discuss 2016.
My name is Charity Hill. I'm the executive producer for Dark Harbor 2016, and I'm also the assistant director of entertainment at the Queen Mary.
For those that have not visited Dark Harbor before, can you paint the picture of what this experience looks like altogether?
So from the moment you walk on property or drive onto property, we try to give you that feeling of creepy, which is pretty easy to do with something as old and beautiful as the Queen Mary. She has a very sordid past. So the Queen Mary herself sets the backdrop of our haunt, and I think that sets her apart from many places. It is considered one of the top 10 most haunted places on Earth, according to Time Magazine. So anytime you have a location like that, with its own paranormal activity, adding a haunt to it just makes it a bonus. So when you drive on site, parking can be difficult. We are on an island, landfill island, so there's a bridge you have to cross no matter what to get here. So in order to make that experience a little more enjoyable, we do deploy monsters on our parking shuttles if you happen to park off site. And if you're lucky enough to get here early enough to park on site, we pipe music through the park and the parking lots, and we definitely do a monster run at 6:45, 15 minutes before show. You'll see our monsters running the streets and then heading back in for show. You'll enter our main entrance, which is the Sea Walk. You drop yourself into basically a shipyard. We're surrounded by containers and ships. We're in a really creepy harbor as it stands, one of the largest in the world. And so we kind of take the natural elements that are here and create what is our haunt. We try to use every inch of our property, which is several thousand acres. The things that you notice the most beyond the ship herself would be 50-foot bursting flame that shoots out from the deep rising Queen Mary that has sunk to the ground. We've got Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch swings, and that is a great focal point. It's beautiful, eerie lighting. The swings themselves are really fun and just something that even as an adult, you just love getting back on. The whole middle and heart, I would say, of the event is very entertainment driven. It's like a giant dance party. DJs, dancing, monster mashups. We've got creepy cabanas that you can rent for your own private parties. And I have 30 different walk-up places you can get a drink. Most people spend the majority of their time in a queue line. And it doesn't matter where you go or how many people. It's always a queue line. So what I tried to address this year was entertainment and bar in every queue. And then I added a mini stage, whether it is like a go-go box size or a full stage, just to keep people from pulling their hair out. So I feel like that's a huge part of the event this year. But rolling out in general, the other thing I think that we always have trouble with is everybody coming at the same time. Everybody wants to come a little late, but they still want to get the same exact experience. How do I push them through before we close the doors? So this year, I also added a pre-party. So from 6 to 7 p.m. in Voodoo Village, we have a new experience called Voodoo House. And that is a potions bar. So there'll be a little party. There's a staged entertainment out there as well from 6 to 7. It's our Happy Haunting Happy Hour. And then we release a certain number of tickets so that if you enter the park before 8 p.m., they're $20 tickets. They sell out really fast. We're halfway, if not more, through that. But I think it's just a nice added touch to try and get people through the door before it gets crazy around here, parking-wise and queue lines and all of that. Voodoo House is one of my favorites. The second piece of Voodoo House is a tasting room. So we will be featuring two different flights, an $18 tequila flight to learn the difference between the different types of tequilas, and then a $25 mezcal versus tequila flight, basically featuring the agave plant. Main stage is beefed up better than before. We have a enhanced fire team. We've added more people to that, so we'll have lots of fire shows. And then we've got a lot of specialty roaming entertainers, anywhere from sword swallowers to blockheads to aerialists and contortionists. We've got electric violinists, people that play the strangest of instruments, really creepy music. Also the staged entertainment, we've got zombie DJs. Just so we have more of a party atmosphere, so you're not just roaming maze to maze.
I did notice that you do have a lot of riggings, you know, already set up now, but that are there to provide an atmosphere throughout the entire area. Like you said, the lines, every element of it while you're in the enclosure is all themed.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I feel very strongly that it's really important to put your guest into time and space immediately. So the faster I can transport you into our world of darkness, I think the better guest experience that we'll provide, because your buy-in is going to be different. Yeah. Queen Mary does that on its own, so we're very lucky. But at the same time, this is the time of year where you have people who have never been to the Queen Mary, but it's also the time of year where we have people who are here all the time and they're diehard fans of the Queen Mary. So we have to run the gamut on the type of experience that we create for them so that the ones who return year after year who support us are still entertained and the ones who come anew are educated on the history of our sordid past as well.
So then really what you are focusing on this year is making sure that every piece of your night, everything all together, every time you're in the space, you're being entertained in some way.
Absolutely. I've been going to haunt since I was little. And I think that one of the things that people have challenges with on the production side are paying attention to their pocketbook versus delivering a great guest experience. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to deliver the latter. Not necessarily at the sake of the other, but I think with all the growing technology, guests expect something different.
Do you think guests are expecting like this, you know, a unique experience, even though they're with a group of people?
Absolutely. You know, we're very much a society, especially as young Americans, of what have you done for me lately? And we're entitled, you know, we are. It's what the previous generation created in us. For whatever reason, we are little monsters that expect the world for very little. Me included, you know. I try to get us above and beyond that, but I do think we are a little lucky being the Queen Mary is we're kind of the underdog haunt. We're a little bit a backyard haunt in the sense of we started from very little. We don't have huge production budgets, and it's a labor of love for the majority of our teams. So people work around the clock to try and deliver an experience to keep up with some of our bigger haunts and neighbors that we love working with. I feel like all of us in the industry push each other to be greater.
So it sounds like you are trying to position yourself as an attraction that like manufactures individual experiences for everyone that comes through.
I think it's both. I don't think a lot of the haunts, because of how big they are, can maneuver the type of party atmosphere that we have. You know, we're one of the few haunts that has a liquor license, so that's why we always dive back to the bar situation. But what we want to deliver is not just a location where you jump from line to line to see a haunt. I think that is fantastic. It's my favorite thing to do. But we try to deliver multiple experiences. So we've got mini a la carte freak shows. You can kind of order up the type of evening and entertainment that you want if you come in a group. Whether you're renting a creepy cabana or renting the patio of Voodoo House or secret bar inside sideshow backstage. It's like there are different things you can do to craft your own experience. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, here for us, it's all about let's all come together and have a party. We want you to go and have your individual experiences, but I think what we bring that's a little different is like let's all party together. And we just happen to have a layout that provides the space for us to come together as a party instead of be so dispersed elsewhere.
I'm actually very curious, what does your production schedule look like?
Everybody gets a couple weeks off after we close in November. And then a lot of pre-production starts right after that. As you know, a lot of the haunt conventions and things are right after that. So our creative team gets going pretty immediately. Everybody takes a moment off. We dive straight into our holiday show. So we work all the way through January 10th and then strike all the way through about February 1st. So February 1st to, I'd say, the 15th is a break for our creative team, not our ops team. They're running another event. Yeah. But our creative team gets to take a mini vacation, and then they start again right away, pretty much March 1st. There's a lot of areas on the ship that need a lot of approval to work in. And the great thing about our creative team is that they've been here long enough and respect our asset enough to know the nuances of what we can do with her and what we can't. But we definitely try to push the boundaries of, hey, we've never been able to introduce this location of the ship to the haunt. Can we? Is it safe for the asset and our guest? If not, then it's a no. But if it's a location issue and just some logistics, that can just take extra planning, but we can get it done. So this year in our Soulmate Maze, we've reversed it and we're able to go through the propeller room, which is second most visited place on the ship. So that's incorporated into the maze this year, and we're really excited about it.
I know a lot of your team also works on the other events, like you just mentioned, but what does your staffing look like the breakdown of your team?
On Dark Harbor, our creative team is small but mighty force. You know, we've got our technical director, our creative director, and our properties director, and then they have teams underneath them, but that's our core group of our creative team. On the production side, which is where I sit overseeing all the other teams, I'm also the second in command in our department for all events all year round. But Dark Harbor and Chill are my babies. So I really head down into production for those. And I spend about 9 months a year on these. And I come up for air to sprinkle in all the other events. But in our department, we have 6 producers full time within the Queen Mary to take care of our filming, our rentals, and our other signature events. And then we all come together to work them all for the most part. And then as far as our operations team is concerned, they come on for the most part, mainly for Dark Harbor and Chill, but our bigger signature events, we bring them in as well. But we've got 2 event managers who basically oversee the operations side of Dark Harbor. And then we've got 1 beverage manager who oversees the beverage operation of Dark Harbor. And then we've got our executive talent director. He's got 5 people under him, and then he handles all the talent division. And then we have costumes, which is a team of 6 to 8, depending on the time of year. And makeup, there's about 30. Something that we've stuck with over the years is makeup's really important to us. We try really hard not to head into the mask world. I think because we started as a small haunt, there's this artistic side that we're trying to keep in play. It's a very well-oiled machine with our makeup director, and she commands anywhere from 26 to 30 chairs a night. We pump through about 300 people through makeup in a 2-hour span, and it's anywhere from hand brush to airbrush, and they're phenomenal. And I believe there's only probably 5 to 8 people in masks, but there are a lot of people with prosthetics, so we've got specialists in all of those different areas.
So how many actors do you bring on to run Dark Harbor?
Gosh, maybe 500. But in a night, we only operate with a couple hundred. There's 212 maze monsters. And then we've got our specialty monsters and street performers and things that are separate cast. And then we have kind of invited talent and entertainment. Mm-hmm. So I'd say overall on a night, you're probably looking at around 300 performers on the streets at any given time.
As an artist and as a member of this creative team, what are your thematic goals, your overarching thematic goals for Dark Harbor and for Queen Mary?
Something that is really important to us is the integrity of the era of the ship, and also always having a nod to our history. So every character that's created, especially when it comes to specific themes of mazes, it has to be organically driven. If we can't drive it back to the story of the ship's past or her history, then we're probably not doing the theme. So we spend a lot of time, sometimes we work backwards. I love this idea of this character. Who is it? in our history? You know, how do we get to this type of maze? Sometimes we even get, you know, as a creative person, you might get sparked by a really cool animatronic or a color palette. And all of a sudden you're like working backwards, like, how do we get that into, where did we have to travel on Earth to get there? You know, I'd say overall arching is trying not to depart too far from reality so that the suspension of disbelief is a little shorter. We want to take our history and just mangle it up. We're not the right haunt for really typical things like zombies and things like that. They're awesome. There's nothing in our story as Dark Harbor that we can really turn to zombie. You know, it's mainly spirit driven and it keeps our story intact for our paranormal and the people who really do believe in the history of the ship. So I'd say our overarching theme is trying to stay in the 20s, 30s, 40s, the era of when the ship herself was built and traveled.
Would you say that you're like trying to raise awareness and expand on some of the elements of the Queen Mary's past through the thematic components of your Dark Harbor event?
I don't know that it's a raise awareness in any sense of the word as it is just being true to her. Some of the characters are embellished, obviously. We take the history that we know from our ship's logs. A lot of it is very mysterious, and then we create our own backstories. Some of it is backstory we do know to be true, and others we choose to protect because these were real people. So basically, we take the elements of who they are and then create our own story for them. And that's what you'll see this year with Intrepid.
We're shifting gears entirely now.
Okay.
Going back to the guest, I want you to give me two examples that you have personally seen in which a guest has experienced exactly the ideal Queen Mary experience.
Okay, here's a good one. Our general manager has a daughter, and her friends wanted to come to Dark Harbor. She's a little young, but she's not a scaredy cat. So she and her friends came, and they didn't make it maybe even 15 minutes before they had to leave and go home. Everybody's so desensitized. So to me, being able to deliver something that people literally can't take, I'm like, yes, we just won. People often come up to me and ask me, where can I go where I'm just not going to be scared, where somebody is going to not run up on me and scare me? I can't take it. So being able to direct people to a place where they can not be scared, to me, I think is one of my favorite moments. Another one that probably doesn't have to do with the guest, but it does have to do with our public and our community, is the complaints we get about our billboards. They're too scary. And for me, I'm looking at them like, this is no different than some of the horror movies I see. I don't know why we're getting, you know, catching heck for it, but I love getting those calls. To me, that means my design team and creative team is one.
You've talked a lot about the Queen Mary almost as a force, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of exerts its will over mm-hmm. some of the people that work here. Walk me through the first time that you fell in love with the Queen Mary.
Ah.
What did it feel like and what were you doing?
Well, and it's really interesting because if you lived in California or Southern California or Los Angeles for any period of time, there's a really good chance you know the Queen Mary and you've never gone. And that was me in college. I went to USC, was right down the street. And so it was never really on my radar. When I took the position here, first of all, the first time you drive up and you're like, I'm going to work on that every single day. You know, it's almost 2.5 times the size of the Titanic. It is a massive mm-hmm. vessel. And on top of that, it's the only one of its kind left on the planet. So there's this historic element that the minute you get on board, it's really infectious. There's love-hate, for sure. She's very difficult to maneuver. Mm-hmm. I've produced events all over the world most of my career, and this definitely daily proves to be the most difficult place to get my job done. But I would say the moment I fell in love with her, we have an onboarding process when you work here. And I got to take almost a 4-hour tour with our Commodore. Literally, there were two things that stand out to me. One was heading to a place called Veranda Grill. And it's the nightclub that was the Starlight Lounge. And it took almost 2 years to get a reservation on it. You would literally book your passage to coincide with when you could get a reservation in the Starlight Lounge. You know, it was the most famous nightclub from here to London. And we're standing in there, and he's telling me about how the room was designed. And it hit me that everything about this place was thought of to an inch of its being, you know? So the carpet was all black, which back in the 30s was very taboo. And the designer had decided that she wanted the woman in the room to be the focal point. So men are always in black and white. So the walls and the linens and the floor were all going to be black and white. And then the woman would be the centerpiece. And there's this mural on the wall in there. And he was like, can you find the mouth? And I'm like, what? And he told me this story about basically she was re-outfitted for World War II to become a warship and traverse the seas to carry our troops back and forth. And after that, it got re-outfitted back to a passenger vessel. But the original artist of the mural was so irritated that the mural had been, you know, harmed that she decided one of the main taglines of the Queen Mary was, you know, it's so clean, something not even a mouse. And so she got so irritated that she painted a little tiny mouse into the hair of a woman in the painting. And it was at that moment where you're like, every inch of this was slaved over and thought of and designed. And I just, she's the masterpiece. There are, I think, 85 different woods on the ship, several which are extinct on the planet. And she's just kind of this walking historic masterpiece that I feel like I didn't realize really existed. So I would say that tour was like, I'm sold. Yeah.
And now you're contributing to this, the legacy of this masterpiece.
I try to do my part. I think the challenge with the Queen Mary is making sure that she doesn't become lost with the generation that knew her so well. You know, we're coming to the end of the era of anyone who ever traveled on the Queen Mary will be passing in the next 3 to 5 years. So we spent a huge portion of the last couple of years traveling the planet to interview the people who still had traveled on the ship. So I think for me, I look at Dark Harbor as one of the ways that I can make the Queen Mary relevant again to a younger demographic and a younger generation. And while some of, you know, the more historical, I'd say, components might get lost, and I think it's our way of sparking that interest again. Because once somebody comes to our Dark Harbor, they start to want to know the backstory of things, which pushes them into the history of the ship.
You know, you're mentioning a lot about the challenges that the Queen Mary possesses. You know, it is a legacy that you need to preserve. If you're willing, I want you to let us in to see a time when you faced a challenge here working with Dark Harbor that you weren't sure that you were going to overcome.
Oh, depending on the season, it can be daily. But there have been a couple of moments. One of them is our asset has a lot of oversight and ownership everywhere from the city of Long Beach, who actually owns the asset, to the long-term leaseholder, to the management company who oversees her daily operation. And I feel like sometimes we're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. You know, very corporate entities don't necessarily understand the process of a vessel that was built 80 years ago. I would say a recent one, well, she's a ship made of steel, so technology is difficult. You know, wireless in solid steel is like a joke. So trying to keep up technologically for my team to be able to stay in constant communication and deliver and decipher information back and forth, it definitely comes with challenges. And our IT department will work around the clock to help us, you know, as much as they can. But it can be very challenging if we're looking at, I have to process 700 people in 2 hours. Any payroll company, I usually try to go out of house for payroll for an event this size. And they just don't quite understand what it would take to do that. We crash every system that comes here. This is our fourth system. And everyone is certain that they'll be able to easily handle what we do. And every year without fail, I'm working on like paper timesheets, like 1987, you know, like old movie style where you walk up to a PA and check in, you know. And so some of the things we do, I get very frustrated with because we can be so forward-thinking and moving at the speed of light with what is required of us financially, but we are working with technology that is, well, non-existent. We're on paper on some things.
Yeah.
And I get really frustrated about it. And then sometimes I'm like, it's just where we are, you know, it's like, but those moments, one happened a week ago, it's very challenging. I mean, it's little things. It's like, I have to turn over 10,000 pieces of paper with 600 people's names, times, all of this, you know, yeah. And it's the simple things like mail merge or having the right software or hardware on our desktops and trying to maneuver to get cabling through the ship in order to send and receive to wireless printers. And we ended up here until 4 a.m.
How did you feel at 4 a.m. when you were doing all of this?
There comes a point where you're just laughing out loud. But that's after throwing things and screaming and going for a walk and telling other people to leave and go for a walk, you know, trying to keep things together operationally and keep everyone positive when we're all working in one small environment. It's like, we cannot affect the creative team with any negative energy, right? Because then they're like, and they're working around the clock too. Yeah. So it was just one of those moments where you just wanted to pull your hair out and walk off the property and be like, I'm going to go sleep for an hour and a half and I'll be back to let you know if I'm going to remain. So I'd say technology can be a challenge for us. This property is very large and everybody, because it's a historic monument, everybody feels like it's theirs. So you have people wandering through back of house in a hotel. You'd never see that at the Four Seasons or at any hotel. You don't walk into a Hilton and go straight into their kitchen. Well, guests here do because they feel like they're ghost hunting and this place is a public asset and they want to go do that. So I have like soundboards missing. And sometimes we're in mazes deep entrenched in them. And it's like you left a handsaw. I walked away to go to the bathroom, come back, the handsaw's gone. And you're like, where did it go? No one's here. And then you're contending with, did somebody steal it? Yeah. Is there an actual ghost? Am I falling down this hole and trap of what is in here with me? And then we're also on the property with Homeland Security. So when people get a little crazy, especially at something like a haunt, there are certain areas that if you step over, it's Homeland Security, the military will be here. And everybody's like, oh, drones, let's do this. And I'm like, we can't do any of that. Things are shot down in the sky here. There's just hurdles that should be really simple. Like being able to deliver some great digital content can be difficult here. We can't fly drones.
Yeah.
And you can't, some of your equipment just won't work in many places of the ship. You're like, it's turned on. There's a battery pack. It's fully charged. There's nothing. We just recorded air. Or it's just dead. So we've got challenges, but who doesn't?
We're here at the end, so go ahead and wrap up the 2016 with us before we sign off.
I think this is my favorite year. I hopped overseas for a convention last year, and I found myself sitting in Scotland, which was the birth of the Queen Mary. And we were trying to tie in a new theme and our new character, and all of a sudden it hit us. My director and I were sitting there, and all of a sudden it was, we're going back to the John Brown shipyard where it all began. So Intrepid herself this year has been really taking her back to her roots, and the character, the Iron Master, is based on the builder of the Queen Mary. So this year I think you're gonna see a lot of animosity between whose ship it is. Is it the captain's or is it the shipbuilders? And then they all have their crews about as well. So we're taking a slight shift. We're keeping in theme of our circus. We can't do anything without our glorious ringmaster, but it's definitely shifting gears into, I would say, a different era, a different time and space, infusing a little bit of our ironwork and the shipyard. So I think 2016 is going to be our best year yet. Everyone here is kind of bubbling over with excitement because it's been a really great creative canvas to work in. I hope to see everyone here, and I'd love to hear all about it.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Charity.
Thank you so much.
Before we sign off for the episode, I need to give some love to our show sponsor, ZTAG.
It was intense.
When the apocalypse comes.
When I was running, it completely dodged an entire crowd of 9.
Will you survive?
You gotta act quickly.
ZTAG brings the undead to life.
If you take your time, it's gonna be too late.
In a real world challenge.
Next thing you know, you turn around, there's zombies.
Of speed, agility, and survival.
This is an awesome birthday.
It's zombies against humans. Hashtag play ZTAG.
I'm Philip Hernandez, and this show is produced by the Haunted Attraction Network. Today's episode was edited and mixed by Mike Migas. Chris Thomas wrote and performed our theme song and our special introduction music. Additional music and vocals from Music Radio Creative. Today's sponsor was Gantam Live and ZTAG. Learn more at www.ztag.com or by finding them on social at PlayZTag. If you enjoyed today's episode, please, please consider subscribing and leaving us a review in iTunes or your favorite podcaster app. Those reviews help us tremendously. If you leave a review, hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, and we can thank you personally. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay scary.